Well, a very talented trio there. Dennis Jernigan, Matthew Ward, and Big Sister Annie Herring together with When the Night is Falling. We heard from the Maranatha Singers, Tommy Coombs' band, Call on the Lord. We also heard from After the Chase and Hearing Me. Good morning to you, 16 minutes after the hour. It's a Monday morning here along the Broken Road, and we're pleased to be joined by Dr. Don Clark from Garden Valley, Texas. Don, a biochemist and, again, a member of the board of Creation Moments. And Don, how are you this morning? Good morning to you.
I'm doing well, Jim. And how are you?
Well, I'm relaxed after a long holiday weekend. You know, with the 4th of July falling on a Thursday, and it seemed like a 4-day holiday, which was kind of nice hereabouts. And the weather was perfect up here. We had heat and humidity, which is really unusual for us up in East Dakota. We had about 85 degrees, 90 degrees, and it was very sticky and hot, but not unpleasant. So I'm doing just fine, thank you. Although I fought the computer fight this last week. Have you ever had a computer crash on you?
Oh, I have, but I use Macs, and they rarely crash, although they have.
Well, the word crash, mine more like disintegrated. It was an old computer. It had lived twice as long as any computer has a right to live. The thing is, it was an XP machine. So now the replacement machine we brought back in is Windows 8, a brand new computer. It's a wonderful machine, but it's like speaking another language, and I had to learn it in 4 or 5 days here. So still trying to get all the pieces put together here and back up to snuff here. Anyway, good
well,
to have...
That's the thing about Macs. I mean, the environment is pretty similar from one Mac to next, even if you do upgrade.
Are you a defender of Macs?
Oh, I've used them pretty much since the Apple II.
Mm-hmm.
And one job that I had, I actually was forced to use a PC. And whenever I did anything to the PC, like add new memory or add a larger hard drive or anything, it was a 3-hour process and spending time with technical support.
Oh,
and everything.
Yeah, I've been there.
It was just horrendous.
Been there and done that. Microsoft has a checkered past with Windows, and I guess there's a lot of controversy about Windows 8. A lot of people not happy with it going back to Windows 7, although that's new to me too. Over the old anyway, that's computer stuff. And we'll get it together, and it'll do fine, I'm sure. Even more complicated than an hour long technical conversation with tech support on a computer is DNA. And Dr. Don has brought to our attention an article from the Institute of Creation Research today. It talks about some new findings in DNA, new information on how DNA is structured. Tell us about this one, Don.
Well, okay, let me give a little background.
Yeah,
again, we've talked about DNA in the past, and we've talked about epigenetics, and we've talked about pseudogenes, and today we're talking about how the three-dimensional structure of DNA affects its gene expression. And DNA is the library of the cell. It'd be like if you had an encyclopedia and you're interested in looking up a certain item, then you would go, you know, either to the index or you would go alphabetically to that to the name of that item, and then you would look up and get the information. Well, gene expression is pretty much like that. When the cell needs a new protein, for example, it goes to the nucleus of the cell and it sends signals to the cell to make more of whatever protein it needs. And, of course, this is going on constantly throughout the cell.
Now, when you say the cell, this is in every cell of our body, isn't it?
Yes, it is. We have, we have 23 pairs of chromosomes in our cells, and the chromosomes inside the chromosomes are genes. And there are, for example, start codes and stop codes, to tell a gene to turn on or turn off. And as we saw, you know, last time, there were pseudogenes, genes that produce information, but actually are involved in control and control or expression of a particular gene. And
now, these were the things that scientists had thought previously were just junk DNA, right?
That's right. Yeah.
So they thought it was like vestigial matter that somehow came from a distant past evolution of us, an earlier creature that were just left over. Now we're discovering they're critical to the operation of DNA and cells.
Well, that's correct. And they classified sections of the DNA as exons and introns, and the introns did not code for proteins, and the exons did. And so they said, well, you know, a more sophisticated, more evolutionary advanced, you know, creature has more introns, you know, per exon. And so the reason why there is more is because they had to, there was more tries in order to get the thing right. And it turns out that's not correct at all. So
this was kind of evidence of past wrong directions in the evolutionary chain. And it seems like they go to great lengths to lend credibility to evolution.
Well, exactly. That was the whole point. Mm-hmm. And they used it for years as arguments for evolution. And
but the point now is they were wrong. They read wrong conclusions,
and it wouldn't surprise me if they're still teaching that in textbooks that's another story. But it seems to take a long time to get that information, that false information, out of textbooks. But now, I mean, they're finding that those introns actually do code for information and are very much involved with controlling the expression of certain proteins. And so they're very, very important to our genome, which is the total library of the DNA library. And to not have them there would cause chaos within a cell, for example, and would cause our cells to go berserk, and mm-hmm. we would call that cancer. Mm-hmm. But the topic today is actually three-dimensional DNA, and like anything in the cell, even though, you know, we normally, if you read a book, you know, here in the American most parts of the world, mm-hmm. you read it, you know, left to right.
Left in a linear fashion, yes.
And it's linear. Mm-hmm. And for the longest time, we thought that, well, that's how DNA is read. It's linear. But it turns out that that's not the case. It's actually much more complicated than that. And DNA, like any protein or structure in the cell, has a configuration to it, or it has a structure to it. And DNA is actually, the molecule itself is twisted, and then that is twisted around other proteins. And the whole thing basically has a superstructure on top of that.
And that's where we get this notion of the double helix, the kind of a twisted ladder picture that we see of DNA?
That is the very simplified picture. Uh-huh. And it doesn't have anything around it like other proteins that mm-hmm. actually coat and protect the DNA. But it's coiled upon coils and it is a really pretty complex structure.
Well, this article tells us that in each of the trillions with a T, mind you, of human body cells in each of us, each of those cells contains about 6 feet of linear DNA strands. That's phenomenal in itself.
Yeah, if you put all the DNA together.
Think of how small a cell is, and there's 6 feet of stuff packed in there.
Right. And you can't see it with your naked eye, obviously. Mm-hmm. And it takes an electron microscope to be able to see the nucleus and the proteins. You know, well, I mean, you can see the nucleus with a regular mm-hmm. microscope, but you can't see the DNA unless you have an electron microscope.
But
so
each cell is very small. Each cell in itself is like a miraculously complicated working machine, isn't it?
That's exactly right. It is a machine, it's a very complicated machine because you've got some parts of the machine that are responsible for making new proteins, and that's a very, very complex process, starting with the DNA and starting with expression of the DNA, and then that makes messenger RNA and other types of RNA, and it leaves the nucleus and goes into the cell protoplasm, which actually has more superstructure that proteins are made on, and with ribosomes and everything else, which some people are, I mean, if you go to school and go take biology class, you begin to learn, you know, some of these things.
Now, this article talks about taking a simple, and uses the example of a line of text, and if it's folded back on itself, kind of maybe like accordion fashion, back and forth, that's what happens in each individual cell, and that's all data that has to be read, sometimes up and down, sometimes left to right, sometimes right to left, and somehow the cell makes sense of all this.
And it does that, apparently, by the DNA structure, which can, the superstructure that can change, depending on the demands and needs of the cell. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it's involved with differentiation, for example. I mean, even though we have, you know, a trillion or so cells in our bodies, they're not all the cells are the same.
Explain the difference between DNA and RNA.
Well, the term DNA refers to deoxyribonucleic acid, and RNA is ribonucleic acid. So the sugar backbone of both of these structures, for example, in the DNA, it's missing a hydroxyl group, or an OH group, if you will. So it gives it a different three-dimensional structure, just because of missing that hydroxyl group.
But the two have different functions, don't they?
And they have very different functions. The RNA actually, let me even put it this way. For example, the DNA is unfolded, and a section of DNA is read, and it's copied, into RNA. And in this case, it's called messenger RNA, or mRNA. The mRNA is then transported through the nucleus membrane, and from there it goes into there's other RNA called ribosomes, which act like enzymes and are enzymes, and they begin the process of taking amino acids, activated amino acids, and linking them together in the correct sequence in order to make a protein. So there's, you know, there's transfer RNAs that are involved in the process because the amino acids connected to the transfer RNA binds to the messenger RNA, and the ribosome then causes a linkage between, let's say, neighboring amino acids in the growing sequence.
And all that is going on in each of the trillions of cells in our body.
It's just astounding. There's thousands and thousands of these things happening all the time, and it's a continuous process. Now, not every protein is made, and not every protein is made to the same quantity, even those proteins that aren't made. But if you have a transport, let's say, protein that pokes through your cell wall. That binds to iron or binds to sugar, for example, and you know those need to be recycled, periodically, and so new proteins are being made to replace those that are going bad. And we don't even understand the whole mechanism of how that.
Well, the piece that's missing to me is how. You know, I kind of know how our brains function, and a lot of it's chemical and electrical, and it's a combination of natural laws working to so that information moves around. But the nature of the information itself in a cell, I imagine, follows that pattern, chemical and electrical. This is very basic. But how does one part of DNA understand what the other part is? I mean, how does it know that it's doing the right thing with the right piece of stuff?
There are chemical transmitters in the cell that say we need more of this stuff, and it goes into the nucleus, and the DNA structure changes in order to express that particular gene. I mean, it's amazing.
It is amazing.
and that is in the superstructure, if you will, of DNA, or the three-dimensional structure, those genes that are on the outside of the superstructure get expressed, and those that are packed inside don't get expressed. And somehow this whole, you know, big ball of DNA, if you will, mm-hmm. The configuration changes as the demand, you know, for information or for a new protein comes along. And, you know, whether it's because of a phosphate that gets, you know, part of the DNA gets phosphated and that changed the configuration, or the proteins that are around the DNA, you know, they come and go because of some type of chemical reaction. Mm-hmm. I don't think we, you know, we have that picture all put together yet.
Well, and the thing that's really stumping me is, it's kind of like the difference between intelligence and data. You know, I have data files on the computer. It's just information stored in a certain order. But something else has to make use of that. And that's intelligence. You have to see something, recognize it, and even if it's inside the computer, not just a human being doing this, but it has to recognize what the data is, take the right part of data and put it in the right place. And to me, that's intelligence. And I have trouble thinking of that as being physical. You know?
Well, yeah, it's all, I mean, that all, it's all physical. I mean, it's all chemical. You know, it's all biochemistry, if you will, and molecular biology. And so there are chemical signals that are going back and forth. Just like in a computer, there are electrical signals going mm-hmm. back and forth, and it's the software that says, "Hey, I need this piece of data."
Yes,
it's the software.
It's the software that amazes me. Yeah, and maybe the role of spirit in all this. I mean, you know, we've talked about this many times, and of course, we're not big fans of evolution here. We think it's kind of an intentional disregard of the facts to adhere to evolution. Of course, they have the same argument with people who believe in creation. But the role of spirit in here as the creator had to have a role. I mean, that's the most amazing thing of this whole thing, is all this could not have happened by accident.
Well, and it's so complex that, it didn't happen by random chance. There's no way that you're going to get, for example, 3 billion DNA base pairs to form our genome. Mm-hmm. 3 billion of those just randomly coming together in the right sequence, so that we've got skin cells, we've got heart cells, we've got muscle cells, we've got, you know, all the different types of cells that we have in our body that we need in order to function properly, that those just happen to, you know, to come together. And then, you know, the more we learn just about the DNA and its structure and how it functions, and the more we learn about the cell, the more we should be saying, wow, this is unbelievably complex.
I think even evolutionists, though, have to look at this and say, this is just astounding what goes on there.
And the thing that prevents people from, you know, believing in a creator is the simple fact that, well, they've already made the premise that I've got to understand everything from a materialistic point of view, mm-hmm. From a, you know, human secularist point of view, and I can't even bring in anything from outside this physical realm. Because if I do, then, you know, I can't do my science. Well, mm-hmm. that's baloney, mm-hmm. Really. It's a fallacious argument, and you can do wonderful science and believe in God and bring God into the picture. And when you find something that is so complex, you should be, you know, in awe of the Creator instead of trying to push him, you know, further and further away.
And to make him disappear.
Right.
Because we can't explain him. He's too big for us to comprehend. And even beyond the complexity of DNA and the cells in our body and the way that functions is the notion that it all functions to a purpose. I mean, it's as if a job was assigned from out, and that's got to come from outside.
Well, it does. And, you know, we've talked about about the role of the Spirit, I mean, you know, Scripture is pretty clear that when your spirit leaves you, you no longer function. And God, you know, in Genesis, it talks about breathing the breath of life into Adam, which we know as pneuma or spirit. Mm-hmm. He wasn't alive until that moment, even though God had formed him physically into the being that he was. And then, you know, his spirit came into his body and he was alive. So there's something even after we, you know, years and years from now, if we ever get there, figure out the mechanics of our human body and, you know, the cell, if we, you know, ever figure that out, there's still something missing.
And there's got to be, I'm just going to say, there's got to be a spiritual component to that somehow. You know, whether, and because we have trouble with our physical minds getting them around something that's non-physical. I mean, that doesn't take up space, that isn't in a specific location, that is not governed by time or distance. We really can't speak that language.
Well, we can, and I'll give you an analogy, and that is computer software. It has all of those properties.
I'm thinking.
It doesn't take up space.
Mm-hmm.
It's invisible. I mean, yes, it's okay. You can read code and, you know, the zeros and one on a computer screen.
You see a representation of
it. That's translating it into something that we can see and feel and touch, and we have a keyboard to, mm-hmm. you know, type code and stuff like that. But inside the computer, what is it?
Well, the keyboard and the mouse are really tools that bridge the gap, aren't they?
They are. They're interfaces mm-hmm. to this invisible world.
So what's our interface to the world of spirit then?
Yeah, I mean it's.
What is the interface?
I mean, what is in our case?
Yeah,
I mean our interface is, of course, you know, we've got speech, we've mm-hmm. got touch and feel and temperature sensors in our skin.
Ways to express what we're thinking and feeling. Yeah,
we've got our senses mm-hmm. basically that we interact with our three-dimensional world around us. Mm-hmm. But we also have this other thing called a spirit that God interacts with. And that's how we can communicate with our Creator, mm-hmm. is through this spirit that He breathed, the breath of life into us. And we can, if you really make the analogy, say, well, you know, that's our software. That's what makes you, you. And me, you know, that's what gives us our personalities.
You know, I've often looked at this whole development of computers over the past 40 years, well, really since the 70s, I guess, late 60s. You can go back to the 40s. I know the old IBM, huge IBM computers that they did shortly after World War II. But this whole progression to the kind of hardware and software we have now is a lesson to us in that it teaches, it's more and more the way spirit works. I mean, we're looking at electrons running around doing work for us all of a sudden. You know, rather than just lighting a light bulb or playing a radio, we're really making it a tool and learning those interfaces, developing new ways to interact with it. So the comparison you brought up, I think, is a wonderful one and a highly useful one, software and hardware. It's an allegory for what happens in the real world between spirit and physical.
Right, and you know what makes your computer, you know, unique to you is you load it with different type of programs,
mm-hmm.
and there's two major, you know, categories. Well, there's more than two major categories, but let's look at the popular computers. There's, you know, we were talking about it earlier. There's Windows, mm-hmm. Microsoft Windows, and mm-hmm. then there's Apple OS,
mm-hmm.
Both of those environments are different. Both of those, you know, and so if you're used to working on a PC, a Microsoft Windows computer, and then you go over to an Apple, you're going to have a little bit of trouble initially, or vice versa, you're going to have a lot of trouble, in getting used to the environment. But it's like the personality of the computer, in a sense. Mm-hmm. And the personality is based on, of course, you know, the different type of programming that's involved in making the computer useful to us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was explaining to you earlier, I think it was off the air, that I'm transitioning from an XP machine operating system to Windows 8, and it's like moving to a foreign country. It's a different language, it's different cultures. You know, you go to the grocery store and you don't find what you expect. There's a lot of changes from one system to the next. So I appreciate this allegory. This is kind of exciting. We're talking with Dr. Don Clark, Creation Moments board director, a director on the board, and a biochemist in his own right. Talk to him just about every morning, and we're privileged to do so. All the past conversations we've had with Dr. Don, by the way, are available on our website, brokenroadradio.com, under that audio archives tab. You can click on Dr. Don's name, and you'll see a show just about each week for the past 2 years now. And this one will be up there later today. We will include a link to this article from the Institute of Creation Research. It's entitled, New Twist in DNA Turns Heads and Genes by Brian Thomas. So you want to peruse that article and listen to the conversation. I think you'll find the article enlightening. And Dr. Don, you've been enlightening too. Again, thanks very much today. Appreciate it.
Oh, you're quite welcome. It's been fun as usual.
And we'll look forward to another visit from Don next Monday. All right now, music continues on our Broken Road Radio Monday from Ashley Cleveland.